Guys, welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I thought I was about to start getting the hiccups, and I was like, that is not going to be fun on a live to have the hiccups, but I think I'm good right now. Ian, how are you, man?
Good.
Good. Did you get done with the workout?
Yeah, barely.
Good for you, man. We're going to talk today about Texas' new offensive identity. Ian did another wonderful piece on that. And then at the end, we're going to do a film study of Arch from Mississippi State. I selected, I think, six or seven plays that I thought were interesting. Some of them will be in reference to Ian's article, and then a couple of them are just because I liked them. So that's going to be the game plan for today's show. Very offensive heavy, very Arch Manning heavy. And also a lot of the national guys have been kind of getting hip to Arch the past week. They've been doing film study, and basically the wave was Arch Manning's the greatest thing ever because he's Arch Manning. Then the natural pushback came of Arch Manning is not good, actually, is just his name. And then now we're back into reality where people are actually studying tape and not just referencing how much they hate Texas when they talk about Arch Manning. So let's begin. All right. Let's pull it up here. All right. So, of course, the offense is going to be different because we have a bunch of different players on it. So what's kind of the first things first, Ian? Do you want to talk about these? We had all these really baller players, but it didn't always matter.
Yeah. I was noting the other day that somebody was – it was in the context of the offensive line and what the offensive line will look like next year. And you'll hear all kinds of different – opinions about the last few offensive lines, which were basically the same thing almost for 3 years in a row, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, like, obviously this line wasn't actually that good. It was pretty overrated. And then there was, boy, we wasted this line. How did we have, like, draft picks at every single offensive line position, but it never felt like Texas was imposing their will. And a big reason for all that was, as the corporate people would say, there was very little synergy on the team. So, like, they had this brilliant pass-protecting line, but they weren't actually that great at play action. Like, I know Quinn's numbers on play action were good. They were better than his other numbers. Same for every quarterback who's ever lived.
That's why you do play action.
That's why you do play action. They didn't, for all the talent they had at protecting the interior of the pocket and the perimeter with their NFL tackles, and for all the talent they had outside of receiver, they did not get that much juice for the squeeze on play action. And they also didn't have, like, there's a big difference between Jonathan Brooks. When Jonathan Brooks was running on defenses that were playing back to stop the pass, he was running wild on people. And people, he could, like, set guys up in space and maximize runs in a way that none of his successors could. Like, Trey Wisner had a very solid year, but Trey Wisner was not doing, like, Brooks or Bijan type things setting up. So you had this, like, deep passing game that was solid, but not as good as it should have been. You had this run game that didn't really clean up for the passing game as much as you would expect. And then, you know, just all the pros and cons of Quinn Ewers that we've been over and over again.
Yeah, 50 times, yeah.
Obviously, a lot of it was Quinn Ewers' skill set did not quite tie everything together. So, big problems. I love the – counter example I came up with, I'm a big fan of. When they had Ricky Williams as a senior, Ricky Williams was not surrounded by NFL players. They had a few NFL players around him, but what they had were really good players at key spots. And they had role players that would never play in the NFL, like Major Applewhite, but who were really skilled at exactly the kind of thing that you needed to be skilled at to make the most of Ricky Williams. So you had, like, fourth round Wade McGarity. You had Major Applewhite throwing him bombs of play action, right? They had also, I can't remember the other receiver they had that year, was also effective down the field. It's not going to come to me. And then he had this like super senior offensive line. And so the sum was greater than the total of the parts in that 1998 Texas offense. And the sum was less than the total of the parts for the last two, probably the last three Longhorns.
I would say three. Even that year we got 8 wins, I felt like that was a 10-win team if we could have maximized even the 8-win year.
I mean, they didn't hit a single deep shot to Xavier Worthy all year.
Yeah.
So I'm not thinking of Brian White, I'm pretty sure. I don't remember who it was, so maybe I shouldn't be so sure, but I don't think it was. I feel like it was a name I would remember.
It's not a big deal. All right, so.
Kwame Cabell.
Cool. That's what it was. So knowing this, right, that we have all this NFL talent the past couple of years and we just weren't able to put it all together due to some on the offensive lines, a lack of
mismatch of
talents.
Skills, of skill sets. Like the great deep threat receivers, not the great deep threat thrower, the great pass protection, not the great pocket guy. On and on it goes.
Yeah. But Ian, it's a new year is upon us. We have some different pieces for the chessboard. On offensive line, at slot likely, at tight end, and of course, Arch Manning, which is going to be a big difference there. How do these new pieces project? Do these things make more sense working together?
I think so.
Right.
We'll see for sure. But maybe the most important thing is that Arch Manning is a dual threat. And so that makes everything easier up front. And then Arch Manning is an absolute assassin on deep routes and play action.
Yeah, we'll see that later.
If you want to be good at, if you were going to pick just three things to be good at as a college quarterback, you would pick not making dumb decisions with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Being at least a marginal dual threat that the defense has to worry about in the run game.
And hit shots. And
shots. Because now those play off of each other extremely well. If you're helping the run game as a adding an extra hat to account for in the run game, it gets harder to defend in the run game. The defense can dedicate fewer defenders to stopping the deep pass. If you're also good at the deep pass, then you got him between a rock and a hard place.
And Trey Wisner doesn't have to get in a bar fight every time he wants to get 3 yards.
Yes.
Because you're right. That's what Brooks was able to do. Brooks was able to see guys 8 yards in front of him and then just put his move on, the dead leg, and do his thing.
So Splenda Daddy mentions Dylan Gabriel. Dylan Gabriel is a perfect example. Perfect example. Baker Mayfield was like that too. Baker Mayfield was more than that, but he was not less than that. Ellinger could never get the deep shot.
I was gonna say he couldn't hit deep, but he sheer force of will did everything else for us all the time. And Arch has those movement abilities. You'll see too in the tape, man, the pocket movement. All of this stuff, you just don't realize how important it is until you don't have it as part of your game. And that's going to be huge for us. What do you think about interior offensive line? I know we're not as excited as pre-spring whenever it was still a platonic ideal. Now we have more reality at that position. But how are you feeling? Do you feel like this can run block better? So we know Goosby is likely an NFL talent, going to be one and done. Good pass blocker. Eric did this morning. He answered this question.
Okay.
Nato's a good run blocker. He's just inconsistent. He said Cole Hudson is solid to good. He said DJ Campbell is good. And then Brandon Baker's a good pass blocker. So we kind of have, at least in the interior, it should feel like we have a run blocking skill set. But of course, the tackles are going to be better in pass blocking. That's a tackle.
The only thing that gives you pause is it sounds like if you have to have it, what are you running?
What scheme?
Yeah.
Oh, me? If I got to have it, it's always going to be some type of wham, dude. It's always going to be a trap, dude. We don't really run it that often. But I get if you have to have it, I mean, inside zone.
With a inside zone or inside zone read?
I mean, I'll always tag a read with Arch. But, yeah, I like the veritability. We need Arch to be able to pull it on the back end. But, yeah.
It's probably zone read, right?
Because the problem with counter is awesome, but if they figure it out, they know where you're headed most likely.
Well, they also the part that concerns me is I think Goosby is a pretty solid run blocker. I think he's underrated there. But he's not, you know, who is the guy that they – he's not Connor Williams, right? And then the word on Baker is similar. It's like this guy is a crazy athlete. Pass protection is coming along well. You're not hearing that he's a mauler.
Right.
You're not hearing anything close to that. And he's the guy that's right next to DJ. So, like, you're pulling DJ, feel decent about that. But then when you pull Neto, I feel good about that too.
Both of them have the athleticism.
But the guy washing down at the point of attack is a tackle, which is, I mean, it's not a big problem, but it'd be nice if they were just getting a little more praise as run blockers. And then, but I think the interior, like Neto plus Hudson on a combo block or Hudson plus Campbell on a combo block. And not an outside zone, but more of an inside or duo, even straight downhill. That's where I think that this team probably has the most punch. They don't have a tight end for that, though, unless it's a zone read. Anyway, I like Cam. I think Campbell is a force multiplier because he can be that good. I think that they can run behind him for tough yards and with Hudson. But I do worry just a little bit about whether or not the tackles will hold things up at all.
Yeah, that's fair. But also just the difference in size between a Majors and a Hudson should really help on those doubles. That's a big thing. And Brian, then you, yeah, Arch is bigger, faster, stronger, with much better arm and deep ball accuracy. He also has that it factors that yours didn't have. I agree.
I think that it factor is that he knows where to go with the ball.
Well, he also does slime whenever he scores touchdowns on sidelines. So he has the off-field too hype. But you'll see, I pick out a play where he's progressing through his reads and getting to like a third or fourth guy. And that's also something you almost never saw with Ewers. Ewers was, is number one open? No, I'm going to pretend to progress down, meaning my eyes are going to cross where the guys are, but really I'm where it's one or check down. And I'll move my eyes slightly like I'm progressing, but I'm not progressing.
Or wander into traffic.
Right. But I think you made a good point too here with injuries, right? This is not a run blocking style tight end. And so you can solve that though with Arch. And what we're talking about is a run blocking tight end on like a split zone is going to be responsible for an end. If you don't want that always, you can make the threat of the quarterback run responsible for the end. So that solves some of the issues there just schematically. And here was your run schemes you were talking about. So you think the gap run schemes are the easiest way to pull all of this together. You like power, counter, or duo. And so Campbell can move regularly around the point of attack. So power schemes, guys, you're going to see a lot of guys pulling, right? And here's your diagram. You're going to see Campbell at right guard pulling around, and then injuries is going to pull around as well and work up to that linebacker. And then here you can tag it on top of the thread of the counter. So you can have – you don't have Q counter or a Q read on this, but you could do Q read – Q counter read with the RPO tag too.
What?
You can cue counter read this if you don't want to throw the RPO.
Yeah.
So you can have you have three options of attack theoretically.
So in a way you could do that is you pull that backside tackle, read that backside end, and then maybe have the tight end release down the field. and let Arch give that a glimpse before he runs behind the pull. There's a lot of things they could do.
that's the point, is that you could theoretically have three prong attacks with Arch due to his legs.
Yeah.
And that matters. That didn't exist with Quinn because he wasn't a run threat. And I think Arch is also a better RPO thrower. Sark says that Quinn was a really good RPO thrower. I don't agree with that. Comparatively to, like, when I just watch other quarterbacks, I think anytime, maybe on a glance, right, where it's wide open, but anytime there's any traffic, Quinn hesitated on that and would also false give in that situation.
I think it depended. I mean, he was pretty good at Ezekiel's wheel, which is not that simple.
That's not in traffic. Like, that's a very clear read.
I thought the glance was probably a weakness, the boundary glance, because he could get picked off on those. But when he was throwing the RPOs that were, like, to the flats.
Yeah, for sure.
I think he was about as good at those as anyone I've seen.
Quinn's one of the best screen throwers, just period, on accuracy, the zip on the ball, all of that stuff. Anytime to the flats, but what's the deal with the flats? There's no one there. So, but as soon as there's anyone there over the middle, the traditional RPOs we think of, the glances, the slants type stuff, Quinn just did not see that part of the field almost at all. And that's an insane thing to give up. And Arch doesn't do that. And Arch will even find ways to work the play longer and move to where it will open up. And we just didn't see that with Quinn. And I'm not trying to turn this into a Quinn couldn't do this fest, but the reality is we are trying to sell you on the advantages of Arch Manning. There's a lot more that can be done here. Doesn't mean he's perfect, but we were limited in a lot of ways schematically last year.
One thing we skipped, if you can scroll back up a little bit to the diagram. The three guys that I see as the cornerstones of the Texas identity are DJ Campbell, Arch Manning, and Ryan Wingo. And so on this play, you have DJ Campbell pulling. So he's the guy that's clearing out the point of attack on the run. You have Ryan Wingo as the Z running a glance route behind the safety if he tries to sneak up on the run. And then you have Arch's versatility and ability to read tying it all together. So again, you have the extreme vertical stress of Ryan Wingo running down the field. Sometimes he'll be on the perimeter too, but down the field is where you really make your money. And then that's three things that are all stopping you from tackling Trey Weisner, you know?
Right.
Nick Campbell clearing out extra space for him to work in, Ryan Wingo holding your back line, and then Arch marrying that with his ability to throw the RPO and the play action, and even further boosting it potentially with a quarterback option read on the backside.
Yeah, that sucks. That sucks to defend. And all of those guys are NFL athletes. So it's not just like some G5 small school that has a sick scheme, but you're playing insurance salesman. These are athletes too. AR's got a question. Sark has a script that he rolls out during the course of the game. Once it's over, the O goes flat. Do you see that happening as much with Arch?
It did not always go flat, for one. I can think of two very notable examples when the script did not go flat last year. One, when they were able to run to close out games, like Arkansas, Texas A&M, I mean, that almost went flat because of turnovers, but they ran over A&M. They ran over Clemson down the stretch. There's probably some other games where that happened. There were a lot of games.
That's to me, like we're running at the end of it, but I think it's also too, quote unquote, the script going flat. The creativity kind of gets punctured out of the ball. Like that first like quarter and a half is incredible. You know, you're like seeing stuff you've never even seen. You're like, wow, that's really creative. And then it just goes to this kind of very base offensive stuff. It just feels like the third quarter, and this year more than last, the previous third quarters, I was like, what's up with Sark? It's like he throws out his playbook and loses that creativity. This year was even stranger because I didn't feel like it was a creativity problem. We just started shooting ourselves in the foot left and right. Like we would just start throwing picks or fumbling. That was a different thing this year that I hadn't seen. But still, it goes to the theme of what AR is saying is like there's this weird difference early game to third quarter with the Longhorns that has been present every year.
But so a lot of that is like, for one, you can't be creative the entire game. You only have so much script. For another, if you don't trust your quarterback and it's a tight game and you're nursing a lead, what's the point in being creative? And then additionally, like Sark was really good at figuring out how to get the leverage he wanted in the run game and just wearing people out. And he's never going to look like a wizard when he's doing that, but you win games. So I push back on that. And then there's another exception when Texas did not run out of creativity and go flat later in games. You know when that was? It's when Arch was the starter.
Right.
Mississippi State. They dropped bombs on Mississippi State, on ULM, later in the game when they could just – that he just trusted Arch. Well, it was a fairly safe context, but he let Arch get after them later in the game with some stuff in ways that he didn't always do with Quinn. So –
But even so, you've named some like exceptions to the rule, but you don't think there is still ultimately a rule?
I think no, not more than any other team. If you're that good at scripting, you're going to have that much of a disparity when you're off the script. And they also, sometimes he would save ammo for later in the games. He's always done that. And they'll do that. Greg Davis used to be like, he was almost like the opposite. He would come out and run a script of things that were designed to see what they would get and verify. And then he would start throwing haymakers that had been set up in the first few drives. And so it made Texas like a better comeback team and a better second half team. But they got into some holes a lot of times that frustrated fans. Fans be whining. That's always the.
I'm with you, AR. Ian's more dismissive of this, and he has been for like the past couple of years. I agree there is something going on there in the second halves. Now, what is that thing? And Ian said it. When you have a quarterback like Quinn, guys, so here's the big thing with Quinn. You'll hear this. This is the mirage that we saw a lot with Quinn. Quinn is really good. Just point to Alabama year one, Alabama year two, or Michigan last year. The reality is I think Quinn is really phenomenal when he knows exactly what's coming, when he knows the 15 plays, when he gets to rep it in practice, when Sark makes sure that that receiver's open and breaks the defense. I think Quinn operates really well under surety. But I think as soon as that – now we're in the bar fight phase. I don't think Quinn did that well in. So my thing is, I think there is a little bit of Sark getting stale sometimes as a caller, but why is he doing that? It might be quarterback dependent. And Ian mentions that too, that, you know, there's some quarterback limitations there. But I do overall have some questions. That's my big thing, man. Like this is why Arch is really important to me this year. Cause I'm gonna be able to answer some questions that I just couldn't answer when we had a singular quarterback. And then Ian is, Sailor Joe, we apologize for Ian's response to this coming up, but we hear this a lot too. Follow up, do we see Sark ever bringing in an OC? We know he's a wizard, but like you said, if it goes flat, maybe an OC can help provide some insight. Ian will flatly dismiss this.
No, I do not see that happening.
Yeah.
I'm going to just stick with my main point about this. If Sark does not want to bring in an OC. He likes calling the plays. That's one of the areas of this that he draws joy. He does not draw joy from trying to manage all these young egos and NIL and all that stuff.
Chasing 17-year-olds to commit.
He does it because he really wants to win. That's not where he draws joy. That's not what fills him up. He wants to call plays. he's not going to do it. Is Texas going to make him hire an OC?
No.
Texas is not going to make Sark do anything. They have zero leverage. He can bail
to the NFL at any point.
Anytime he freaking wants. So just enjoy. Enjoy it for what it is. It's not going to be different.
Yeah. I like Ian. It's not even – yeah, it's just not even a possibility. So even entertaining the conversation, it just ends up being fruitless.
Wait, but, no. Oh, God. Bring up this follow-up, please.
Which one?
The Franklin one.
James Franklin is the same way, and he finally brought in an OC. I can see comparisons between them. That's why I ask. But you're right about the love for play calling.
Here's the key difference. James Franklin is an offensive nincompoop.
Ooh, language, Ian, language.
He keeps bringing in OCs and coaches and over-meddling with them. And the reason that Franklin keeps hiring new OCs is because they keep losing all their big games. Sark would be like Franklin if Sark was like eight to nine wins every year, but always lost to Oklahoma and always lost to, it was always like barely losing that Alabama, Michigan, whatever the other big game is every year. Imagine if Sark always lost that game and always lost the Oklahoma game and won every other game.
Yeah.
Very different. Very different. Also, we don't want to emulate. There's no way in which James Franklin is the model for what we want to aim for.
For sure. Before we keep going, guys.
Academy.
Academy Sports and Outdoors is your new home for Jordan. Gear up today and take flight on the court, off the court, and above the court. Unleash your greatness with head-to-toe Jordan gear for the entire family. Available in-store and at academy.com. Elevated styles and shoes for everyone. Unstoppable value every single day. Plus, Academy offers easy ways to shop and save time, like free one-hour in-store or curbside pickup on academy.com orders. Or choose the same-day delivery option powered by DoorDash. You can order by 4 p.m. and get it to your home by 8 p.m. Check out Academy's full Jordan selection today at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Oh, yeah, baby. All right. You ready to look at some tape, Ian? I haven't even shown you these clips, so you'll see them live. Is there anything else from the article you want to hit before we move forward?
Just that. This one point. It's possible that Trey Wisner or whoever plays running back, if one guy gets like 200 carries in the offense, they might have huge numbers. It's possible that Jack Andrews will catch 50 balls for 800 yards and 12 touchdowns or something and have like monster numbers. One of the other receivers, DeAndre Moore, Emmett Mosley, it's possible that someone is going to eat big and have huge numbers. But I think if that happens, it'll be a result of the stress created by the Campbell, Manning, Wingo triumvirate. Not that those guys, like, credit to those guys if they do those things. But I think those other guys are going to be like, I'm always in, like, NBA mode at this time of year.
Yeah, you are.
The guy that has, like, the game-changing game where he hits, like, 7 of 10 threes and flips a game. And it's like a role player, though. And he's shooting all these open shots because the other team was like, all right, we got a double team Steph or whatever. I think that'll be those guys in this offense. Yeah. They're going to all have their opportunities to just feast if this works the way I think it will. But that doesn't mean that they're the engines.
Right.
Okay.
That sounded like you were preparing a legal argument for six months down the road. All right. Let's look at some March Manning stuff. All righty. Sorry, I have to do some screen movements here to get this to pull up. All right. We want to look at the window here. Okay. All right. Good to go. See it on your screen, Ian?
Yep. Yep.
Cool. Okay. This is Arch Manning versus Mississippi State. This is all 22. This first play is RPO. I do not think it's counter, but we'll see. I can't remember. So, but this is showing you what Ian's talking about, at least in the RPO side of things.
Any chance we can make it just a little bit bigger?
Not really.
Okay. I can see it well enough, so.
Okay, yeah, it's about that, but all right.
Just see my face like this.
Yeah, it's good. Bring your glasses. Bring your readers. So we are in double tight, 12 personnel, motion to the left side of the line. Fake give to blue, and then I think it's out to Bond. Yep. So this is to the field side, but let's imagine this. There is a pull here with Connor. And then imagine it with Wingo. So this is going to be a big feature, Ian thinks, of the upcoming offense. Right, Ian?
Yeah. You'd call this a GH counter. Guard and the H-back pull.
And then you flip it out. So even though it's not Campbell going here, and it's double tight, so they do pick up the end on the left side by Gunnar Helm, you can introduce a read there. And then you pull it and flip it out to Wingo.
Can you see? Do you have the sideline angle?
Not on this one. I will.
It would appear that they played really far off of Isaiah
Bond.
Yeah, Bond. And.
And they did that all game, by the way, because Arch opens the game by basically hitting all these quick comebacks because they're playing 15 yards off of our receivers. So that's a good bet.
Yeah, Sark has been really good at this. Quinn, Malik Murphy, Arch Manning alike have all been really good at taking the easy candy when they give you those hitches outside because they don't want to get beat over the top. You can see they have the coverage layered where, like, the glance would maybe be covered up because that safety is too deep to try to force a glance in there.
Yeah.
But just that quick hitch, it's hard to cover it all.
That's the whole point.
Unless you're ready to play man coverage up in their face like Georgia. And Mississippi State was not ready to do that.
Splendid Daddy asks, are there any drawbacks going from Quinn to Arch? So I would say maybe that there would be added two things. There would be added interception risk, but we heard that Arch was protecting the ball during the spring. Number two, the idea that Quinn protected the ball is a relic. That didn't occur last season. Quinn did not protect the ball well last season. So whenever we talk about Quinn being like, you know, game manager and not turning it over, that was from 2 years ago. So the initial thought is just to do the hack, like he's a young quarterback, so he's going to throw more picks. But the reality is, I don't know if he will.
Maybe increased scrutiny. Although it's hard to do more than having a guy on Bansville every Saturday. So
yeah, probably not. So let's think through like what a quarterback needs. They need good feet. Arch wins there. They need good pocket presence. Arch wins there. Ideally, they have size so they can withstand the pocket if someone does touch them. Arch wins there. Screen game, Quinn. I give screen game to Quinn. But it's not – I mean, it might be a difference in three completion percentage points at the end of the season. Maybe I'll give Quinn layered second-level deep balls. But I give it to Arch deep. I give it to Arch in the RPO game. And then I give it to Arch in with legs. Why are you smirking, Ian?
I'm just interacting with the commenters.
Okay. So what do you think? Is there anything that stands out that you think Quinn is going to absolutely do better than Arch?
No.
All right, moving on. All right. Let me see the commenters too. Okay, cool. Now let's. That's the first RPO. Let's. I was looking at these last night, so let me refresh my mind here. Is this the sideline of that? No, it's different. But all right, so this is just showing you the threat. Similar thing that's occurring here, different play though. But you see right here, it's they a give. Dude, Mississippi State played so off of us. It's crazy, and Arch made him pay every time. But this he does the give here, but here's the threat, right? Bond's at the bottom of your screen right here for the RPO, especially if they're going to play that far off. I'm almost telling Arch to throw it no matter what, because just look at the space we have here. But that's another RPO option that we're going to look at. This is the same angle but end zone. So Arch's eyes is clearly on Bond, but he decides to give the read because you'll see the hole is wide open here for a second. Then it collapses immediately. But right there, it's looking like you're going for a big run. So you're going to see a ton of this RPO tagging, right? I mean, almost every handoff is going to have like some thread of play action RPO of a pull by Arch. You're going to have these complicated, not clear pictures for the defense in the backfield seemingly all the time. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Who is it that, where did this go wrong? Can you go back?
I think Campbell ends up getting
Campbell. That's not great.
It's Cam. It's Cam. So Cam has number 9 right here. And then I think 9, this is technically a double team, but I think 9 shoots inside here in a second, but also Campbell might get Olaid right here by number 8 too. So let's see. No, Campbell holds on well. So 9 just – they double-team 9, but they don't have the right leverage. So 9 shoots in and blows it up right there.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because, man, look at that running lane. He beats that safety 10 coming up, then he's got a big run.
I'm not sure if his read is right, though. He's going to go back again one more time. The idea is that you would I think 7 you would potentially leave unblocked. Yeah, no, that's fine.
But also here, man, if I'm Arch, I'm throwing this regardless, dude. Like Bond is wide open and he's faster than everyone. So it's like throw this, you know? Why wouldn't you? Ball. But that's the RPO game. Expect to see a ton of that, guys. That's going to be a huge factor. All right. These are my purple label clips, if I can remember what these are. Play actions? Yeah. Okay.
This is when we were, like, so close to getting relief from the sun in the south end zone. Not quite. I remember it well.
So 11 personnel, play action. And then up top here, 16 comes screaming off the edge. Are these play actions or mobilities? These are mobilities tied with play action. So 16 up top right here. Y'all can see my cursor. This guy right here comes screaming off the edge. Back kind of picks him up. I mean, good enough for a college back. But watch him smack Arch with his arm, and it doesn't do anything to Arch. Boom. Quinn goes down there. And so then he's able to turn his hips. He's keeping the eyes. He's able to avoid this guy. He's keeping eyes downfield the whole time at who he's trying to hit on the crosser. And then,
boom. Oh, yeah, this one.
Yeah. So this is what the scouts are seeing too, guys. So play action doesn't even get phased. Smacks, stands up to the pressure, eyes downfield, resets his feet, turns his hip, delivers the strike on a crosser.
So he goes wheel. Wheel is picked up. He scans the post, deep safety, goes with the post from the other end of the field.
Right.
And then it's the deep over, isolated on probably a defensive back, but still running into open space, man-to-man with a trailing defender.
Yep. Step up, hit it. Versus an SEC team, right? Now, Mississippi State's pass defense was like one of the worst in the country, but still an SEC team, right? So let's look. We can probably see his eyes here in the end zone. 16 comes flying off the edge. Back kind of picks him up. Arch sidesteps that and keeps it going.
The another thing is, like, sometimes, like, Wynn or other guys could see this. Lots of quarterbacks could potentially see that, but not all of them can keep their eyes on it and maintain the kind of base that allows them to quickly respond and throw the ball in the window of time that they're afforded to make that throw. Instead, you'll see all the time guys will, like, get knocked off their spot by that rush, scramble around, see something, and then try to pull up to throw, but they, like, can't get their feet set to throw down the field, or they take too long to set their feet, and then they throw it, and then everyone goes, oh, he just threw into triple coverage. And it's like, well, no, he saw an awesome window, but then by the time he got to throw it, the Division I athletes on the back end and zone coverage had seen what he was doing and got there, you know?
Yeah. There was never a year where a single deep shot to Worthy wasn't – that he was – it was hyperbole. He didn't mean that no deep shots ever were hit to him. It was just a year where Quinn and
Wait.
Couldn't connect to save their lives.
No. 2022, I am not sure that they hit a single deep shot to Xavier Worthy from Quinn.
I don't know. PFF would tell me.
I mean,
pull it up.
He probably hits like an over or something.
You're talking about like a fade, traditional post fade,
deep fade ball. Post, something where he was running behind the defense.
What was 2022? What year was that? Who did we play?
2022. That was the first Alabama game, the Stillwater loss, the first Washington Bowl loss, TCU.
No, because he hit that sideline fade to Worthy in that first year. And Worthy did that jumping catch on the sidelines.
That may have been the only one the entire year.
Yeah, I'm saying that it's not literal zero. There's no way they didn't hit a single one. But the point was
if the answer is one though, and we're not totally sure.
Yeah,
I'm not giving up. Somebody made this video back in the time that I couldn't help but finding amusing. I'm not thinking of 2023. I'm thinking of 2022, where somebody said a compilation of all of Quinn's deep shots in 2022.
That was Kieran. Kieran made that.
And then it was just fades to black.
Yeah. Oh, no, not that one. Kieran did a compilation of just all the missed shots we had that was pretty brutal. But the point is this, yes, that was devastating. All right. So that was a play action element also with the ability to move and hit a target, remain fixed on a target and hit him downfield as a crosser with a trailing defender. Okay, here we have little play action on a fake reverse here.
Pulling the guard.
Yeah, and then watch again. 16 comes flying off the edge once again. Look at this. No problem. No fear. It's not even a run-up to the pocket. He trusts his feet. Boom, step. One slight adjustment there, and this is what I like here. He doesn't throw this ball, but he just gets us extra yards. And you'll see he freezes these defenders here, too, with a fake pitch out on this, too. This is stuff, guys, when they're like, Arch Manning, it's his name only. This is not name only stuff, man. The feel here to be early versus the SEC opponent, I know it's Mississippi State, but they still got players in Mississippi State. And to just have this feel and this understanding under pressure, hey, I'm just going to step up. Oh, it's not there. I'm going to stay like I'm going to fire. And then I'm going to continue on to run for however many yards. That's rare stuff, guys. It's not like normal quarterbacking.
This is a Josh Allen type run too, where he's like running and you're like, oh, okay, he's going to get it. Still on his feet. Why is he still running? Why is he still running?
Yeah. And then, and also too, he's staying dangerous, right? It's still a pass. And you'll see he pump fakes right here and freezes the defense before taking it down. He pump fakes again when he's already crossed the line, but players are so used to a pump fake, it'll work past the line. But he freezes number 21. 21 has the ability to tackle Arch here, but he keeps pump faking like he's going to give it to the receiver. So 21 ends up turning his back, covering a receiver, even though Arch cannot throw it anymore. And then that allows him to skirt that little corner and almost score.
Are we sure he didn't score?
Yeah, that's the one that was debated repeatedly. But, man, just this, right? You know, once again, I'm trying.
In the stadium, I thought he scored, but I don't think I've really revisited the replay. So,
but also here, I don't want to bag on Quinn here, but if it's not there, this play just – nothing happens in last year's offense if this is not there. But instead, with Arch, we're able to get, what, a 30-yard run out of it.
It's, yeah.
And he earns this run by pump faking 21, who then thinks he needs to go guard the receiver. Or DeAndre Moore up here, he pump fakes him. So it's that level too. It's like he's understanding
how to move. He wasn't wrong to cover that because we've seen Arch roll
you'll
out
see and you'll see
hit right. that on the move.
Before. Correct. And he does that. And he scored with Silas Bolding doing it versus UTSA, right? And then you'll also see a clip later where he does the same thing and he does throw it. So 21's like not wrong. It's just he's past the line of scrimmage. And so you have to have that awareness. But right there, if he's behind him, he can flick it out. But just that awareness of Arch to know how to manipulate, to not be – he's not nervous in this scramble. He's not running for his life. As he's running, he was staying dangerous, and then he's seeing the field and manipulating certain defenders while he's on the run. That's interesting. And does he score here? Let's see. Foot? No. Right there.
Why did you say no?
Because I think he goes knees down right here, technically. Knees down and elbow down, like right. See the line? You see that little bit of grass between? It's really hard for you to see, I bet. But there's like a sliver of green right there.
I'll take your word for it. I definitely can't see that.
Yeah, take my word. All right, and then this is a – this might be the one. Let's see here. This is a mobility element. Okay. All right. So here's the play action. Eyes downfield. Sets up. Good feet. Works. Hitches. Not there. Once again. Is that 16 again? I don't know who it is. But they're sending guys screaming off the edge after Arch. Doesn't panic. Moves forward in the pocket. And this is what Ian was talking about. He's running this way. He has field. He could probably go that way. But look at this awareness. He's aware number 9 is sitting down here. While he's doing all of this work in the pocket, and you guys can't see it as well, but at this point, he's looking the complete opposite direction. Right here, he's looking this direction. He runs up in this pocket, and at the last second, he turns his head and throws it. It's this awareness that's freaky. Boom. And so what's also funny, if you watch the tape, our skill players are not used to this play style. So often they don't maximize it. So Arch does this really cool thing and the receiver drops it because he's not expecting to get the ball. Arch does this really cool thing and we get the ball and then we just slip and fall, you know? So it's like the team's also going to have to become aware that you're always live with Arch and you need to stay relevant. So when Arch starts scrambling around, don't just immediately go to block because he still might be working an angle to get you the ball.
Good point.
And I've seen that with a lot of scrambling quarterbacks. Skill players have to learn to adjust to that play style. Let's go here. He's looking this direction like he's going to run. Sees 90 is a big player. Jukes him. Then turns his head at the last second there. Throws to 9. Then he falls down.
Crazy.
Isn't that crazy? So that's what McShay and everybody's seeing. Like, this is real tape here of him at the beginning of last year. And he's at another year.
Yeah.
We have a couple more clips here, guys. But before we keep going, I want you to hear a word from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
Okay, this one is also going to be the famous, I think this is the famous bomb that Arch hits. We'll see.
Which one is the famous one?
The one where he takes the hit before delivering the strike.
No, that's not this one.
Yeah, we'll see. No. So this is the progression that I was telling you about earlier. So he's working this side of the field up top, and then he gets through his read. Helm is at the bottom. He's going to run this in breaker at the end, and then Arch will check it down to him and get him the ball. So some of this is progression. Some of this is likely knowing that Helm's going to come open at the end of this. So kind of, you know, work the safeties or work that side of the field with your eyes. Either way, it's an NFL-style way of controlling defenders. Works back down, ball. And just quick release, all there.
Did they convert this?
No. This is the line to gain is like still 700 feet up here. Ball.
Is this one where they go for it on fourth after a penalty and then they blow it?
I think so. Mm. But I like the progressions there, and he works towards it. You'll see it to here.
Yeah.
So end zone. Ball, working that side of the field, working the middle of the field now, and then finally turns his hips. And just look at the comfortability in the pocket here. He just looks like he's on an afternoon stroll. He's not paranoid by what's going on around him. It's a good pocket. I mean, it's a beautiful, that's really good pass protection. But there's just no kind of nervousness or anxiety in his feet. Ball. And he's able to get it to Helm. Deep dive. Yeah, deep dive is tomorrow. We'll release it at noon tomorrow. Finally, this should be the bomb.
Yep.
We are in 11 personnel. Sark motions blue out. Yeah, Sark motions blue. So now we're in empty. Cool, man. And Mississippi State, there's a couple ways you can play empty. And Mississippi State goes, okay, great. We know that you have, that means you have five offensive linemen. We're going to send more than five. So they're going to send, theoretically, right here, 4-6. So there's a clicking. There should be a ticking clock right now that you should know, hey, they're bringing more than I can block, a.k.a. I'm about to get hit in my chest, and I need to deliver the ball.
You know what the big tell is that the guy that followed the running back, they didn't bounce everybody out of man. They had a specific guy follow him out.
Yep.
So that tells you man coverage. If they're in man coverage, then they're not going to bail out of this into quarters or something.
And so if they're,
they're bringing the heat.
Yeah. If they're in man, they have the extra guy to do the blitz. So he does this. Arch knows he's going to get hit. Bam. Takes it. Delivers a beautiful ball. Also, good win by the wide receiver.
My guy, Max Toscano, posted this video. Just after the playoffs, and this is not going to make people happy. And he posted this clip, and he goes, "It's wild how Texas just chose not to win the national championship last year."
Yeah, it's sad, but there's some reality to it. So they know they're bringing six against five blockers. Arch knows he's about to get hit.
Stands, does he move his feet at all, or does he just perfectly time it?
Let's see. Nope, perfect. Perfect drop, hitch, ball. And also, not scared to open up. Because this sucks, dude. Not only are you getting hit, you're getting hit open. You're just letting – I think this is Stone Blanton, right, with, like, the best SEC linebacker name of all time. You're just letting Stone Blanton not only hit you, but just hit you in your ribs, dude. Like, that's going to suck. And deliver the strike. Boom. Right. And a little bit of smart, he doesn't let it influence how he's throwing it. But even right the second after he throws it, he has a little bit of body intelligence to turn a little bit so he doesn't absorb the full impact. Right there. Boom. Goes down.
Do you remember when Case McCoy in these situations? I just remember so many times Case McCoy in the same situation would see it and throw it, but he'd be like ducking. It was exactly. A classic chuck and duck.
Yeah, and it screws up your mechanics and you miss.
Yes.
But this is quarterbacking, dude. Like, this is tough quarterbacking. Like, they're going to tell you in the NFL, like, they're going to love this play, not because he just hits the strike, but because he knows he's going to take the hit. And it doesn't affect his throw or his footwork. Bang. So that's been it on the Arch Manning show today. Those are our clips. But that's what I wanted to talk through. As you're seeing guys that are actually watching tape, there's a lot to be excited about here. And I try not to overhype. I did a tweet yesterday. I try not to overhype it. But the more and more I really study Arch Manning's tape, he does a lot of this stuff that's super advanced, man. He's able to manipulate defenders. He's understanding what's going on. He has a supreme confidence, and the confidence is displayed by how he plays, aka taking the hit. And when he runs, man, he looks like he's just out for a stroll a lot of these times. It's not like these frantic plays. And so he's just out for a stroll. Hey, I know I got to manipulate 21. Let me fake pump it out there. And also, if 21 doesn't react, maybe I do pitch it out there. You know, so he's got this dynamicism, hopefully I said that right, to his game that's impressive. And this was, a year ago on top of everything.
Yeah. He has that advantage of the long strides, or when he's moving at with the right angle, then he can kind of watch it develop and then like accelerate into a window of opportunity when he sees it. Because of those strides. Vince Young was like that. Vince Young regularly didn't look like he was working that hard or moving that fast. He just kind of would just glide around. Arch is not as not anywhere near as agile, but he's got that same like acceleration and long stride effect.
But also, man, you're going to freak teams out with this ability to run, but you also show pitch, and you will, and you have tape of you actually, like I said, running and then turning around and throwing it, looking at the last second because you know your guy's in the flats and hitting him. That's going to stress teams out, man. And you saw Mississippi State here too. There's a lot of examples where they're sending this edge, you know, three of those clips. They're sending that edge screaming off the edge. So, like, there's teams have tried the, well, let's heat them up too. And so, and you know what solves that? Going empty and hitting the fade. That'll get them to quit doing that as much. But I remember watching UTSA, and it was very similar too. They were playing arch like it was a Quinn offense. And then they realized at some point they were like, let's just send the house. Let's see what that happens. And it did have more success. But arch starts to kind of figure it out as it's going on. And then also intangibles, right? Like scoring the play versus Texas A&M whenever he comes in and that kind of environment. It's cool to get those reps, man, and make those plays. So that's why I'm really excited about Arch. It has nothing to do with his name. In fact, I wasn't even looking at his name. We were looking at his tape to verify all of our claims. He's going to be a good quarterback, guys. He just simply does a lot of things that it requires to be a good quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these things are not even – some of these are typical Manning things that you expect, and some of them are not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the flip when everyone was like, wow, Arch Manning is just an exceptional generational prospect? He'll be at Georgia for sure. Maybe Alabama.
Maybe Clemson.
And then he leaves – the deep south and goes to Texas. And then all of a sudden, well, if you weren't named Manning, that's when it switched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so disingenuous. And then even within that switch, there's been another wave. So like Arch did good versus UTSA and Mississippi State. And then ESPN started posting highlight videos. They got millions of views, which is nuts. Singular college player highlight videos on ESPN getting millions of views. And so then it was like, Texas got something in Arch. And then the typical next wave was no, I haven't seen the tape, but I hate Texas, and so Arch sucks. And then now the real NFL guys and the tape watchers have started the next wave of, like, this guy's going to be really good. And we know Eric has said behind the scenes that sources have used the H word, Heisman. So that's important, too.
Hey, Splendid Daddy, go, yes, fire off your question.
Yeah. Long as it's brand friendly, go ahead and fire off your question, dude. So it's going to be a lot of fun, man. I'm just because also it's not his play style is fun, dude. Like, as a fan, it is fun to watch Arch Manning.
This is the I believed in Sark's pocket emphasis and his offense overall, but I'd said before, it's one of my favorite hot takes. I was like, I kind of wish though that we had the more like
hero ball.
Yeah, bordering on hero ball kind of quarterback at Texas, ideally from the state, because the state produces a lot of kids like that. It's just really fun to watch, and it's not like it holds you back from winning. Like, it works really well, and gonna kind of backdoor into it with Arch.
Yeah,
and then KJ Lacy and Dia Bell are also perfect for it. It bothers me just a little bit that none of them are from Texas. I like having
it
Texas.
Doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't bother me at all, man. Give me whoever it is, man.
But I like all of them a lot. Like, I like KJ Lacy and the way he plays. I like Dia Bell from what I've seen. I actually really like and respect his dad. And Arch, obviously, the Mannings are great. So
yeah, and Dia Bell has this play style too, which is cool.
Yeah, he's very similar to Arch. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, I didn't even think about the comp that much until we were watching on last week's show, and I was like, this is a very similar style of play. All right, everyone knows CFP teams can't compete with an NFL team. Dying to know Ian's opinion on CFP versus UFL.
So you have to take, I'm assuming we have to take, like, the national champion.
Like, yeah, let's do it this way. Take the best college football team versus the worst UFL team, and then the best college football team versus the best UFL team.
So I haven't watched much UFL, but here's my instinct is that older men who, I don't know what the drug policies are like in UFL, but watching how some people's bodies change when they hit the NFL, I don't know if there's much enforcement at any level.
Correct.
Or else just like people are so good at skirting around the rules that it doesn't matter. Older men fighting for a mortgage who are professionals, putting in a lot of time into more complex schemes. It'd be like if you took the best Michigan State players of the last 10 years and you put them all on a single roster. I feel like that's basically a UFL team, right? It's like a ton of fringe NFL players who were good or serious in college. And so I'm thinking that the UFL team is going to win.
It's like if you took a bunch of ninth round NFL players, there's only seven rounds, but they would be in the ninth rounds of if there was an NFL draft.
My only hang up is, so like you take your average college football team, they get boat raced because college football's massive. Okay. You take your typical Power Five team, I think they also get whipped. But you take your top Georgia, Ohio State, Texas team, that deal where you have multiple early round draft picks in the trenches, I think it gets a little more dicey.
I also think you're giving the UFL a lot of credit. Like, when you watch it, it's a really bad product. Like, they're discombobulated. There's a little bit bad news bears with these guys. There's a little bit of an arena football vibe there. Like, of course, they're talented athletes or else they wouldn't be in it. But, like, they're also just not very, like, there's not a lot of court. Like Adrian Martinez would be like a quarterback in the UFL.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like the caliber is there, but it's also just like, I got to make sure this makes sense before I say it. But like the UFL has a demand. They're forcing the supply on some of this stuff. So it's like, yeah, he was a pretty good college player, but he shouldn't be a pro player, you know, but it's just like, but because we have X rosters to fill, you're going to be on it no matter what type of thing.
Do they have different rules like the arena, or is it the same rules and same dimensions?
I don't know all totality, but they do rules testing in the UFL and then bring it to the NFL. So like they would test different kickoff structures and that kind of stuff.
Right. So it's not like arena where you have guys running at the line of scrimmage and you have the condensed dimensions and all
no,
that.
No.
That would be a big game changer.
Yeah, right? It's not such a different dimension sport. It wouldn't even be the same sport.
I still think so. Like people are saying, like Splendid Daddy knows quarterback play in the UFL is absolutely rough. Well, how much of that is your fringe NFL defensive backs with like professional playbooks and professional coverages? That's really tough to beat.
Especially I think the top college football team, and I don't think about the NFL at all, I would argue that there's a game between the worst UFL team and the top college football team.
Yeah. I don't think it's – I think
their coordination's better in college too. So I think, like, even though the players are younger, that they know the playbook's actually probably stronger.
I don't know.
UFL is not go watch some UFL. It's not a great thing that's occurring there. It's not very high level.
It's hard for me to bet on 21 to 22 year olds versus 25 to 26 year olds. That's my biggest hang up.
Yeah, but it's also too, like, you know, Adrian Martinez is a quarterback, but he didn't make the NFL. This is a pro league, but it's not a pro league. They didn't make the pro league.
No, I know, but I know I'm not saying pro is an indication of the talent level. I'm saying pro is an indication of
there's no class to go to. There's
Yes. But I ultimately have never watched a UFL game. So my opinion
I watched them a couple times and I really don't enjoy them.
I think we just robbed Splendid Daddy of $10. I don't know if we have the expertise to
Splendid Daddy, we're sorry, man. We apologize. I'll give you an opinion. I think they win the versus the worst team because I think they're discombobulated, coordinated. I don't think they're true pros. So, yeah. And we beat Adrian Martinez when he was in there, so I don't care about a three-year difference, you know. We proved that we can beat those guys. All right. Those UFL dudes have kids to feed. So do half the college teams, dude. You'd be surprised how many children current college players have. And the college players already – we're acting too like college and not a professional league. I mean, these young men are millionaires. College is a professional league too that I would argue is better than the UFL. All right. Ian, I enjoyed hanging out and talking to Arch Manning. Getting some hype going, getting the Heisman campaign started. Chat, you guys are great as always. And for those asking, yes, deep dive going live tomorrow. Also check Wednesday Night Live coming out this evening. And then, of course, Joe and Ian will return tomorrow for Thursday morning IT Live. This was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Hook 'em, y'all. Peace.